The topic, the theme of the retreat this year is acceptance and progress. So a key aspect of acceptance, can everybody hear me? Back, can you hear me? Okay. So a key aspect to acceptance is determining where you are. So progress is, it has three components: determining where you are, determining where you want to be, and then charting the course. So if any of these three are lacking, then the progress, to say the least, may be difficult to make. So the retreat is basically divided in the discussion of these three aspects of one's devotional life. Understanding where you are, where we need to be, we kind of know, we want to be with Krishna. And then, based on where we are, charting our progress. So where we are is also known as adhikar. It is the eligibility of the candidate for accepting devotional service. It's a little counterintuitive translation, because adhikar literally translates to right. This is my adhikar, this is my right. And the reason it gets in this context translated to ability, because it is assumed that when one recognizes their right, they will execute according to that understanding. So it also becomes the eligibility of the devotee. So to understand adhikar, I just wanted to throw a few questions to the audience over here. So in Bhagavad Gita, what is the most confidential instruction that is given by Krishna? Saravadharam Pratyajay. So I'm glad, otherwise I would have to change the slide. I'm glad that answer came. So, abandon all varieties of religion and surrender unto me. I shall deliver you, do not fear. So after hearing this instruction, what does Arjun do? Does he abandon his religion? He's a Kshatriya. So what is the Kshatriya dharma? Battle. So does he abandon? So no. Again, it's good we have the same conception. So he does not. So does that mean that Arjun decides not to act as per Krishna's final instruction? Because Krishna explicitly said, this is the most confidential instruction, that you abandon all varieties of religion, which also includes Kshatriya dharma. And Arjun says, I will fight. So how do we reconcile it? So actually, in his action, what Arjun demonstrates is that he has completely understood Krishna's instruction. So when we say completely, what we mean is that we understand the instruction and its context also. So one thing very important in spirituality is to understand the context. So earlier on in 1816, Krishna had said to Arjun that compelled by the work born of your own nature, you will act all the same. So this is Krishna informing Arjun of his adhika. His eligibility right now is that because he has the nature of a Kshatriya, he will act in that conception. So what Arjun does is that according to his propensity and level of advancement, he serves Krishna. So this is the experiential definition of adhikar. Can everybody see the, or is it too low? Can you read the bottom line? You can't read the bottom line? Can we do something about it? What's the lowest line that you can read? Third point. Is that okay now? You all are a little hard to please, I can see that. Okay, so we are good? So this is the experiential definition of adhikar, is to execute devotional service according to one's own level of realization. So, a formal definition of adhikar from Srimad Bhagavatam, Svesvedikareya nishtha saguna parikritataha viparyasastu doshasyad ubayor esha nishchayaha. Steadiness in one's own position is declared to be actual piety, whereas deviation from one's position is considered impiety. In this way, the two are definitely ascertained. So there is only one person who can speak in such definitive ways, and that is Krishna. So this is actually a statement that is spoken by Krishna to Uddhav in Uddhav Gita, where he defines adhikar very simple, and you know that is the essence of eloquence, simplicity. Very simply, Krishna describes adhikar, that being steady in your own position. If you are not, then it is your. So it's kind of like if you remember in the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, when Arjuna asks that what is divine and demoniac natures, Krishna gives a very simple definition. If you follow the scriptures, you're divine. If you don't follow the scriptures, you're demoniac. Very, very simple classification. No. Later on, he expands to it, but that's the simple class. That's the beauty of Krishna's instructions. They're very simple, easy to understand, and sutric. That you know they apply in all circumstances. So this is the understanding of adhikar, being steady in one's own position. Earlier on, in the Bhagavatam, Pratu Maharaj also gives a definition of adhikar. And when he's speaking to his praja, he says, according to your abilities and the occupations in which you're situated, you should engage your service at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead with full confidence and without reservation. Then you will surely be successful in achieving the final objective in your lives. So this verse is important because Prithvi Maharaj, he indicates what happens when one follows one's adhikar. So Prithvi Maharaj is an avatar, he is Shaktivesha avatar of Krishna. So here he is assuring that you will surely be successful in achieving the final objective. So what is the relevance of adhikar from a practical perspective? And this is explained by Bhakti Vinod Thakur in Bhakti Aloka, that as one progresses through one's devotional life, they will go through different stages. For every stage, there is a prescription and there is a prohibition. So prescription is do this, and prohibition is do not do this. By following this enjoined prescription and prohibitions, one becomes eligible to attain the next step. So this is the key to making advancement in one's spiritual life, that one follows one's own adhikar sincerely. So for every adhikar, there is an injunction and there is a prohibition. Do this and don't do this. Simply by following these two, one automatically becomes qualified for the next step. And this, Bhakti Vinod Thakur says, is advancement. The flip side, what happens if one is not aware of one's adhikar, or one knowingly violates one adhikar, then falls down to a lower step? This he calls as degradation. So the conclusion is that one attains a higher level as a result of following the rules prescribed according to the qualification. So this is the efficacy of adhikar, that when you are aware of your adhikar and you follow the do's and don'ts as per the adhikar, then you automatically become eligible to make spiritual advancements. If you don't, you will regress, you will fall down. So some years back, I think this is actually maybe 11 years ago, Maharaj actually had sent out a meditation on this topic of Adhikar, which was actually an expansion on what Bhaktivinoda Thakur said in Bhakti Aloka. So I'm not going to read the whole slide, just the highlighted part. The yoga ladder recognizes that not all persons are equally spiritually evolved. So there are people at different levels of spiritual advancement. According to one's level of spiritual attainment, therefore, recommendations or niyamas are assigned, and these niyamas are necessarily different. So Maharaj makes a very important point here, that it's not that one brush paints everything. Everybody has a different position, and according to that position, they have different prescriptions and prohibitions. And Maharaj says that they are necessarily different because they reflect one's own position. The means of spiritual advancement and the cause of degradation is thus clearly identified. This is a statement by Sachinand Maharaj, which was a little bit mystical, because when I started preparing on this topic, and I was thinking about it, so almost the next day morning, there was this posting by Maharaj on this topic. So I took it as Krishna's instruction that I should share this, and it's very relevant. Maharaj says that all of us have a certain nature, and it doesn't suit us to cut parts of it away. It is important to know your nature and accept it. You may use your nature in Krishna's service. Let us not try to be someone we are not. Let us not pretend to be someone we are not. Let us not try and occupy a post that is not ours. All posts are already taken, except the one you are supposed to occupy. Use your nature and see where you fit into devotional service. So what are the dangers of not understanding Adhikar? So this is the question to the audience. What is the main reason ISKCON? So nobody knows of anybody who has left ISKCON. So they don't know their place. They don't have a taste for service. Say that again. They get burnt up. They're confused.
They're not able to be steady.
Not steady. Okay.
They don't have a loving relationship with the share.
Okay. Okay, so because of other devotees. That's the main reason. So there was a lecture by Radhanath Maharaj in which he was sharing this actual instance from Chopati, that there was a congregation member who was coming for many years. And Maharaj says, you know, very, very sober person, chanting 16 rounds, coming for Mangalarti, and he saw him coming over and over for a long period of time. So Maharaj once approached him and said that, why don't you take initiation and become part of the family? So, and you know, then he very humbly said, I've been coming for so many years to the Chopari temple and I've been treated so wonderfully. That's what keeps me coming back again and again. He said, but I also see how devotees treat one another. So I don't want to lose this sweet interaction that I have for now. So I am okay as it is. Srila Prabhupada said that the main danger to ISKCON was from within, not outside. What does that mean? So our internal impurities can impede ISKCON. How does it manifest? Interaction from devotees, yeah. So Prabhupada is that the devotees. That is why he said, and he said that many, many times, that if you really want to serve me, you should cooperate with others. So Prabhupada would say that Maya is there, but we already know about Maya. We are already careful about Maya. What we are not careful about is each other. And that's where he said, cooperate, cooperate, cooperate. This is something that actually a devotee who used to live in Gitanagari. So some of you may know that back in the 80s, Gitanagari was like a... I'll send the present... Prabhu, if you want the presentation, I'll send it to you. Or anybody who wants it, give me your email, I'll send the presentation to you. So this is actually somebody from... back in the 80s, there were more than 200 devotees, full-time devotees, who used to stay in Gitanagari. And Mataji, who actually stayed in Gitanagari, once shared this with me. She was a new mother at the time. And she said that the challenge of living in Gitanagari was that people would actually literally run over you to attend Mangal Arati. So this is not figuratively. So they would actually run over you so that they could come when the conch was blowing. And of course, you know, she had a sense of humor. But she also said that it was only about me and Krishna. That was about it. That there is me, there is Krishna. Everybody else is an impediment. So in the early days of ISKCON, even though people were not, they weren't really fully aware of all the dynamics, but empirically they would see this happen over and over again, that a new bhakta would come, and you know, he would come, he would start chanting, and you know, he would attend Mangal Arati, and then he would think that he's a pure devotee, so you know, so he would start acting on that platform of, you know, of being completely pure, and then he would burn out. So this is a term that I understand Prabhupada used. Then he would bloop. Bloop means that he would just then go away. So this was actually called the pure devotee syndrome in the early days of ISKCON. So for those of you who have heard Guru Maharaj's lecture, he often refers to this as "I have my blinders on" approach. That this is me, this is my service, and these are my blinders. And if somebody comes on my way, I'm going to knock over you. So what is the root of all this? The root of all this is an improper understanding of adhikar. That what does adhikar actually mean? And then we'll explore a little bit more. That as we understand a more comprehensive perspective, then we can protect ourselves from these pitfalls. So broadly speaking, adhikar is divided into three levels of successively higher realizations. So there is the first level, which is the Kanishta Adhikari, also known as the materialistic devotee. There is the Madhyam Adhikari, which is a practicing devotee. And there is the Uttam Adhikari, that is a perfected devotee. So the basis of this division, so adhikar is so important that almost all the primary scriptures talk about it, either directly or indirectly. So like if you remember, if you see Srimad Bhagavatam, right up front as Srimad Bhagavatam opens up, what does it establish? It establishes the adhikar of the reader. That dharma projata kaita, after having abandoned all varieties of cheating religion, now you are ready to read the Srimad Bhagavatam. So Chaitanya Charitamrita, Isopanishad, Nectar of Instruction, they all talk about adhikar, and they talk about different aspects of adhikar, so that we can kind of assemble the different aspects to get a more comprehensive understanding. So I'm going to apologize ahead. I have a background in engineering, so I'm very comfortable with graphs. So for those of you who are not, I've tried to make it as simple as possible. So divisions of adhikar, one might say, are Kanishta Adhikari, Madhyam Adhikari, and Uttam Adhikari. So in a way, we can understand it this way, because there are three stages. But factually, it's not like that. It's not that you're Kanishta and then, you know, after 6 months you're Madhyam and after 2 years you're Uttam. Or, you know, one fine day you get up and you're like a Madhyam Adhikari and, you know. So it doesn't really, so it's not like a step function. So we may think that maybe it's a gradual progression. That, you know, you keep making progress, and then, you know, you're Kanishta at some point, you're Madhyam at some point, you're Uttam at some point. The reality is somewhere in between the two of these situations. It's not really a step function, not really a linear function. So, this is what Adhikara actually looks like. Now, how do we understand this progression of Adhikara? So this is explained by Narad Muni in Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto. So, so we are short of time and we'll cover it quickly. So when the basis for Bhagavatam is being set, then you remember that Vyasadeva, he is in a kind of depression. That, you know, I've done so much and still I'm not feeling happy about it. Then who comes to him? Narad Muni comes to him. Now he does to Vyasadeva. Well, not does to him, but speaks to him. Two kinds of things. One is that he chastises him. You know, he says that you have spoken about indirect devotion. And the second is that he glorifies him. He says that you have understood the realized conclusions of the scriptures. You are firm in your vows. And then finally, what does he say? That you are as good as the personality of Godhead himself. And the reason he does is that because he is reminding Srila Vyasadeva of his adhikar. That you are not to, so this is a situation of one acting below one's adhikar. So Narad Muni is saying is that this is not where you end. Fine, you have given all this information for people to make materialistic advancement in the context of religiosity. But what about pure devotional service? And that's why he criticizes him first and then he glorifies him. That you are actually qualified to talk about pure devotional service because of these reasons. And then what does Narad Muni do? He starts talking about his own life. So when you read it, it's a non-sequitur. That, you know, Narad Muni is coming and giving instructions to Vyasadeva, and then all of a sudden he becomes apparently nostalgic, and starts speaking about his own life. But the reason is that what Narad Muni is illustrating to Vyasadeva is how he himself made progress through the various stages of Adhikara. And that is why he is reinforcing this point to Srila Vyasadeva, that you are also ready to now speak about Ananya Bhakti. So Narad Muni says that earlier on he was spiritually innocent as a child. He was living, his mother was a maid servant. He did not really have any scriptural knowledge. He was attached to his mother, and he also said that he had some material detachment. So he said that he was not naughty. He did not play a lot. He did not speak too much. So some amount of material detachment. And then what happens? That there is the causeless mercy of the Bhaktivedantas. And that brings him to the next stage of Madhyam Adhikara. So what are the symptoms that he shares? So he receives instructions about bhakti from them. He gets initiated by them into the science of bhakti. He gets a glimpse of Krishna. So if you remember that he was once meditating, and he gets a glimpse of Krishna. So this is not just Narad Muni. This is true for each and every one of us. That as we transition from Kanishta to Madhyam, there is this stage where we have this experience of very, very sweet reciprocation. Then the bhakti is so sweet. You know, anything that you want to do, you want to center it around Krishna and devotees. And that is... And Krishna over here, he openly admits. He says, why did he give it to Narad Muni? Because he wanted to give him the taste for it. He says, you're not qualified to see me now. You don't have the adhikar. But the reason I've shown you myself is to give you the taste. And why does he want to give the taste? Because the path ahead is full of trials and tribulations. So without that taste, difficult to sustain. So many of us, we have that, you know, we have that we have that memory of that sweetness that we had when we took to Krishna consciousness, and that's what keeps us going, that we'll get it again. Sorry? Krishna also does what? Krishna dangles a carrot. Yeah. So he dangles a carrot just to motivate us. And what did Narad Muni do after that? He associated, so the rest of, he says, visiting holy places, associating with devotees, chanting the holy name, typical actions of a person at Madhyamadhikar. And then what happens at the end of Krishna's, Narad Muni's life? He gets the mercy of Krishna. And then he basically, in his next life, he is born as a pure devotee. So Narad Muni, by sharing this progression of Adhikar with Vyasadev, is also anchoring him in the proper conception as to where he actually is. So as an Uttam Adhikari, what does Narad Muni does? Continuously chant the holy name and preach. That are his only activities. So we can understand that Adhikar is therefore divided into the progression of Adhikar is charted in this way, that there is an initial phase of one in which a person is a Kanishta Adhikari, and then at some point he gets the causeless mercy of another devotee. The stage of Madhyam Adhikar is actually the longest stage, and it is also the most arduous and the most difficult stage. It is where people might spend several lifetimes. Not necessary. You know, like Dhruva Maharaj, he went all the way from Kanishta Adhikari to Uttam Adhikari in how long? In just 6 months. The four Kumars, how long did it take to go from Kanishta Adhikari to Uttam Adhikari? One moment. They smelled the tulsi leaf and they were in business after that. So for some people it takes, but for the typical person, it is. So these are great personalities. But for a typical person, the Madhyam Adhikar is the longest phase. The longest phase because it is Anishta Bhakti. You make some progress, you take 2 steps forward, you take 1 step back, you again take 3 steps forward, you take 2 steps back. So it goes on and on and on after that, until the stage of Anartha Nivritti. And then Krishna's mercy manifests, and then we go into... And after that, if you look at Uttam Adhikar, that is Krishna now reaching down and pulling us up. Very little effort from our side. Krishna does all the heavy lifting. So according to the Nectar of Devotion, divides Adhikar causally. That what is the cause of a person being a Kanishta Adhikari? And it says weak knowledge and weak faith. Weak knowledge of the scriptures and weak faith in the conclusions of the scriptures. Madhyam Adhikari, strong faith and good knowledge. So the knowledge that we are speaking over here is not really jnana. It's more of vigyan. It's more of realized knowledge. So it's not that, you know, after you learn 200 verses, you're a Madhyam Adhikari, and after you do 5,000 verses. So it doesn't work like that. Actually, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says jnanis are Kanishta Adhikaris. So it's not just what you know, but how you experience it. It's like, for all of us, you know, we read the Bhagavad Gita and Krishna right up front says that you're not the body, you're the soul. We believe it. You know, intellectually we believe it. But for us to realize it in our heart, it takes a while. When we actually begin to realize that we're not the body, that's when we start developing true detachment. And that's when we start to develop true spiritual attachment. So that's the difference between jnana and vigyan. So this progression is more on the path of realized knowledge. Uttam Adhikari, complete faith and strong knowledge. Symptomatically, different scriptures divide Adhikar differently. So according to Srimad, so this is that how does a Kanishta Adhikari behave? What are the symptoms that he displays? So Srimad Bhagavatam says that Kanishta Adhikari, they are attached to a specific deity. And they'll since they're not aware of anything else, they'll devotees. They have no affinity, nor are they envious of deities. So they will be like, you know, like there are some people who are very much attached to the Balaji deity. So they'll go to India, they'll worship the deity, but they may be a Hare Krishna temple down the street, they'll never go there. So they have just that sentimental attachment to a particular deity, and they will go, and it's mostly materialistic. So they'll go to the deity and they'll say that, you know, I need a better job, and you know, can you take care of my health? Here's $100, and if all is taken care of, another $100 is there for you. So, you know, they have a mostly materialistic interaction with the deity. Madhyamadhikari worships the deity and are also aware of the different grades of devotees. So actually all this discussion of Adhikar is only meant for Madhyamadhikaris. Because Kanishtadhikaris, they don't even know this whole concept of, you know, of Krishna, devotees, etc. So, you know, it's of no relevance to them. For the Uttamadhikari, they're so steeped in humility that it is unable for them to make that distinction. So for them, everybody is higher than them. Everybody is in relation to Krishna, a pure soul. So they cannot make that distinction. So all this discussion is actually for Madhyamadhikaris, because they are at that stage where they can make that distinction. So they are able to make the distinction between the envious, between the neophytes and the advanced, and they will associate with them accordingly. So they will avoid the envious, they will give the mercy to the innocent, and they will serve the advanced devotees. The Uttamadhikari, they see everything in relationship to Krishna, and they're fully engaged in the service of Krishna. According to Bhagavad Gita, what are the divisions of Adhikar? So this is from the 12th chapter, verses 8 to 12, the yoga ladder. So Kanishtha Adhikari is the Prakrat Bhakta, and these are people who are following Karma, Jnana and Astang. And in the 7th chapter, Krishna divides them further into four kinds, the Atho, Arthati, Jigyasu and Jnani, the distressed, the one who is desiring wealth, one who is inquisitive, and one who is in knowledge. Madhyamadhikari, Krishna says two kinds, one who is practicing Sadhana Vedi Bhakti. So basically one who is following the rules and regulations of the devotional service because they believe it's the right thing to do, not because they have a strong inherent attraction for it. And the second is, which is at a slightly lower level, is the Karma Mishra Bhakti, which these are people who work, who may not follow the rules and regulations, but who like to work for Krishna. So like there are some people who come to the temple, they may not be chanting, they may not be following the regulative principles, but they'll come and they'll clean. They'll clean all the utensils, they'll give obeisances to the deities, and they'll go. So they won't have much interaction with the devotees, they don't have much siddhant, but they have the sense of wanting to work for the Lord. And then finally, Uttamadhikari, that's 12-pointed, Ananya Bhakta, one who is spontaneously attracted to the service of the Lord. Now, divisions of Adhikar as per Bhakti Vinod Thakur in Bhakti Tattva Vivek. So here what he does is he takes the 9 stages of Bhakti and divides them in the 3 stages. So Kanishtadhikari is at the stage of Shraddha, soft faith. Madhyamadhikari, he is typically at the stage of the next 4, which is Sadhu Sangh, Bhajanakriya, Anartha Nivritti and Nishtha. So as you know, that the stage of Anartha Nivritti is the most difficult stage to cross. That is why Madhyama is such a long stage. Because over and over we remove Anarthas through the process of Bhakti, and the new ones come. And so they're not really new ones, they were always there, but they surface. And then we remove them, and then new ones come. And so the process of Anartha Nivritti is very, very painful. It takes a long time, and why is actually the stage where he struggles the most. Uttamadhikari, this is at the stage of spontaneous bhakti, ruchi, ashakti, bhav and prem. According to realization, the Kanishtadhikari is mostly at the stage of sambandha gyan. So he's trying to figure out his relationship with Krishna. Who I am, who is Krishna, how are we related. Madhyamadhikari is at the stage of abhidhaya. That after having understood the relationship, at least theoretically, he is trying to put it into practice. And an Uttam Adhikari is at the stage of Prayojan where he is actually enjoying in that relationship. According to Srila Prabhupada, a Kanishtha Adhikari is typically received Harinam Diksha and is trying to chant sincerely. So this, of course, he is speaking at a higher stage of Kanishtha, almost next to the Madhyam Adhikari. A Madhyam Adhikari has received Brahman Diksha and is engaged by the spiritual master in the service of the Lord. So, a Madhyam Adhikari, one of the symptoms that Prabhupada says of Madhyam Adhikari is that he is fully surrendered to his, to the instructions of his Guru. And Uttam Adhikari, Prabhupada says, is, does not blaspheme others, the heart is clean, he has attained unalloyed Krishna consciousness. And then Prabhupada says that such a person can change the entire world. So, quick recap. So, Kanishtha Adhikari has soft faith, is trying to work out Sambandh Gyan, and practices motivated bhakti. How does he typically act? Strongly materialistic, because they are more into the material conception than the spiritual conception. Will have an attraction to a specific deity, mostly sentimental. They will either ignore or disrespect devotees. So we see that also sometimes, you know, we'll see that sannyasis, they will go out preaching, and when they go out preaching, then people may treat them differently, disrespect them, argue with them, and that's just because they are either they are non-devotees or they are Kanishtha Adhikaris. But there's no Vaishnava Prad there, because they are innocent of the relationship. Do not follow rules and regulations, and in a more advanced stage would have received Harinam Diksha. So what are the do's? So one of the premise of this discussion is that after having recognized our stage, we need to figure out what are the prescriptions and prohibitions for this. So important for the Kanishtha Adhikaris is to try and associate with devotees, try and follow rules and regulations. The third is actually the most important, which is to try and develop some material detachment. The first two actually happen more in a more advanced stage of Kanishtha Adhikari, but what actually transitions a person into spirituality is some amount of material detachment. And typically when preaching to Kanishtha Adhikaris, that is the focus. That try and get yourself a little bit less engrossed in your material life. What are the don'ts? Do not associate with non-devotees because they have very weak faith. Anybody will tell them anything and they'll follow it. So somebody tells them this and they'll follow that. So if we are working with Kanishthas, then one thing we have to protect is the scope of their association. Do not engage in debates. Important. Sometimes people get a little knowledge and then they'll go out and they'll start debating and they'll often get defeated. So, then they'll start questioning the very premise. Or worse is they might get convinced about the other person's viewpoint. So they might engage in a debate and they come back thinking that the other person is right. So it's important for them to listen more than speak. Should not aspire to become a spiritual master or a perceptor. Very, very important. So a lot of people in this stage, so this is the earlier stage of the pure devotee syndrome, where the person thinks that I can change the whole world. So at this point, it is important for them to grow the roots before they start giving shelter. They should have, before a tree can give shelter, it should have deep roots, so that it can nourish itself. The caveat to this is that unless empowered by the spiritual master. So there are many times when a Kanishtha Adhikari may be empowered by the spiritual master to preach. Srila Prabhupada said that. You know, he said that people would say that, Prabhupada, we really don't know anything. How can we preach? We ourselves are confused. And Prabhupada would say that if you repeat whatever I say sincerely, you'll be fully protected. And what did he mean that you're fully protected? You'll be protected from these things over here. From basically falling down unintentionally. How to interact with a person at this adhikar? nectar of instruction, it says such a person should be respected within the mind. So it doesn't mean that you respect within mind and disrespect, like, you know, verbally. But what it means is that you should not put the person at a very exalted stage prematurely. Sometimes what happens is when devotees are trying to cultivate people, you know, they'll say that, you know, even though the person is a neophyte, they'll say, oh, you're such a great devotee, you're so pure. The problem is that the other person will actually believe it. You know, so, you know, when you say it, you'll say, yeah, you know, this is a nice Prabhu, he's telling me, you know, like Nityanand Pram, you know, this is the temple president, is telling me, you know, maybe I am a pure devotee. You know, he'll start thinking like that, and then he'll start acting like that. And the problem is that because he's not at the stage, he'll get burnt out. So what Rupa Goswami says is, you respect within the mind, give your association to them, then engage as per their material propensity. So, you know, somebody is good at managing numbers. So maybe they can do some service over there. Somebody is good at accounts, they can help out in the temple books. So engage as per the material propensity. The last, which is the most important, is not to judge. Bhaktivinoda Thakur actually says that a person becomes glorious by glorifying the Kanishtha Adhikaris. So one should never actually judge. Sometimes, you know, people tend to use Kanishtha more as a derogatory term. You know, like you're having a discussion and they say, why are you behaving like a Kanishtha? You know, so, you know, you try to say that, you know, you're really off the chart. And, you know, it's, and of course, if you call a Madhyama Kanishtha, it may have some relevance there. But actually a Kanishtha is glorious because he's on his way to becoming an Uttamadhikari. Each one of us, at some point, maybe in this life, maybe in a previous life, were Kanishtha Adhikaris. And the reason why we are here is because we got somebody's mercy. So when we see a person who is beginning their spiritual journey, it is actually a very glorious phase in their life, and the persons are very glorious because they are embarking on something that is so special and sweet. So never to judge, but only to help. How am I doing with time? So I was also told that since I started 20 minutes late, I would get another 30 minutes. At the 15 minutes. Okay. Well, 15. I started 15 minutes late, but I'll get another 30 minutes, right? So, Madhyama Adhikari. Good knowledge and strong faith, sadhu sang, bhajan kriya, anarth nivritti, nishtha, is at the realization of abhidhaya, and is typically a practicing devotee. How does he typically act? He understands the position of the devotees, basically elation of adhikaris for Madhyama Adhikaris, and then he associates accordingly, aspires to execute genuine service, but is not steady. Why is he not steady? Why is the anishtha? Because of the anarthas. The anarthas are the biggest cause of, or really the only cause of, anishtha. Will follow rules and regulations mostly externally, because the spiritual master had said so, because the preceptor has said so, or because they intellectually believe. So don't have that spontaneous attraction, getting up in the morning, you know, wow, 16 rounds, let's do it. So not that, but, you know, getting up in the morning and said, you know, I've committed to 16 rounds, let me do my 16 rounds. So it's more because of voluntary submission to the authority, and typically would have attained second initiation. What are the do's? Most important do's for the Madhyama Adhikari is to associate with devotees. Madhyama Adhikaris are safe in associating with devotees because they understand the distinction of the different grades of devotees. Become steady in following the rules or regulations. Preaching is very important for Madhyama Adhikari. Why? Because every time you preach to somebody, you preach to yourself. Very, very important. And every time you preach to somebody, Krishna's mercy comes through. So, because this stage is so difficult, you need all the help that you can get. Don'ts. The converse of the danger of associating with devotees is that you start taking devotees for granted. It's like it's said that Malyagari ki bhilni chandan de jalai. that so in the Malaya mountains in the south, there are chandan, there are forests made of chandan trees, where who used to live, Veerappan, right? There's this so he used to live in all the trees where they're like sandalwood trees. But the Adivasi women who were living over there, they don't understand. They use the chandan tree to light the stuff. So his familiarity breeds contempt there. So very, very important for Madhyamadhikaris is to protect yourself from Vaishnav aprad. Don't associate with envious. So this is an injunction that protects one from taking undue risks. So a Madhyamadhikari may want to, like, I'll give you a personal example, that once I was in this Vaishnav Islam dialogue. Most of the time they go very well. You know, people are very open and hearing. Once I was there, and this person started off saying that because the Hindu scriptures have lost so much over the centuries and have changed so much over the centuries, Hinduism is not a bona fide religion anymore. So he started off with this, and then I was really struck at the time, because what he was saying was right. You know, Jiva Goswami says that 94% of the scriptures are actually lost. And a lot of the scriptures are also have been, because they are Vedic Sanskrit, they have been interpreted. But obviously it didn't feel right in my heart to me that Hinduism is not a bona fide religion. And then Ravindra Swarup Prabhu was there, and then he immediately jumped in. So this is how an Uttam Adhikari behaves. Then he immediately jumped in and he said that I have convinced myself that Hinduism is bona fide, so I am comfortable following it. If you have a problem, then you need to study more about it. And then that changed the focus. And after that, there were different people in the Islamic denomination. They actually, which I didn't know, they actually said that there are four versions of Qurans. So this person was saying that Quran has not changed a single syllable since the time it came, you know, how many thousand years. He said, no, there are four versions of Quran. The Sufis follow a different Quran. But the point I was making is that at the stage of a Madhyamar, one should not take undue risks of being exposed too much to enviable. Pride is very important to protect, because a lot of the practices at Madhyamadhikari are external. Rules and regulations. So one starts becoming proud of them. I get up at 2 o'clock in the morning. I take a cold water shower. I stand my rounds before 4 o'clock. Lot of it are externals, and they result in the person becoming proud. So there's nothing wrong in doing it, but for the right reasons. How do we interact? Accept immediately as a bona fide Vaishnav. Offer obeisances. So when interaction, this is directed towards Madhyamadhikari. How should one Madhyamadhikari interact towards another Madhyamadhikari? So offer obeisances, and then associate in the four ways that Rupa Goswami said, Dadati Pratigranati, Guhyamakhati Prashati. So, you know, offer prasadam, take prasadam, exchange confidential matters, and take gifts and give gifts. Most important, exchange gifts. Uttam Adhikari, strong faith and complete knowledge. How does he typically act? He's an expert in supporting the Siddhant, in convincing or defeating others. So if a Madhyam Adhikari goes to a debate and gets law and he loses the debate, it does not affect his spirituality, typically. He may lose the debate, but he'll say that, fine, I don't understand. But an Uttam Adhikari will go and actually defeat the other person, because he understands the Siddhant. He understands the scriptures completely. Rules and regulations he may follow or he may not follow. So here we see that how the prescriptions are changing. For a Madhyam Adhikari, following rules and regulations are important. For an Uttam Adhikari, they are optional. They may follow or may not follow, but typically they will, to set an example. Very steady. They will never deviate from the principles of the higher authority. Humble, just because they have that vision of everybody in relationship to Krishna. Because of that humility, since they're not able to discriminate between devotees, very often an Uttam Adhikari will come down to the stage of a Madhyam Adhikari to preach. But they will only adjust their vision in this respect. So it's not that they'll give up the realizations. It's not that, you know, they'll forget the Siddhant. Everything is there. But just in this context, that they will start distinguishing between different grades of devotees only for the purpose of preaching. So the do's for Krishna is love Krishna, and do's for Uttamadhikari is love Krishna and preach. Don't is envy Krishna. So these are what are known as constitutional Niyamagrahas. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says there are two kinds of Niyamagrahas, conditional and constitutional. Constitutional apply to the soul, conditional apply to the embodied soul. So an Uttamadhikari is only subject to the constitutional Niyamagrahas. So the constitutional lies, there is only one injunction, love Krishna. There is only one prohibition, do not envy Krishna. How to interact with them, associate with them and faithfully serve should be followed but never imitated. Very important. Should be followed. Many people try to imitate Prabhupada. It's very dangerous. So the idea is that one should follow their instructions but not try to follow them. It says follow their actions. So quick review. So what I wanted to do was I wanted to break this into two parts. The first part is more philosophy, the second part is more practice, and then I wanted to have a small skit in between that kind of marries the two. So it's kind of like a fulcrum, that there is the philosophy, there is a practice, and there is something that kind of demonstrates the philosophy in practice. So after the review we'll have a small skit, and then we'll have some more discussion in terms of what is the, as practicing devotees, how do we understand Adhikar in our own lives. So quick review, that Adhikar is primarily for Padnyam Adhikaris because they are the only one who can understand and act upon it. Neophytes do not have the understanding. Adhikar itself is nuanced. We saw that graph over and over again, that it's more like a stepped curve. Important that one should understand Adhikar for only two purposes, for evaluating yourself and for helping others. So we should not go by looking at people saying Kanishtha, Madhyam, Uttam, Kanishtha, you know, we should not do like that, you know. So we, first thing is we should look at ourselves and say that this is me. And the second thing is we should look at other person and say, new devotee, how can I help him? Advanced devotee, how can I serve him? Madhyam Adhikari, how can I associate with him? So very well, and Krishna actually, later on we'll discuss, Krishna actually very strongly speaks about this. That we should only use it for service, but never for judgment. One should not observe Adhikar to imitate or judge. And then most of the downfalls of great personalities in the scriptures are actually because of an improper understanding of Adhikar. We'll have a little bit discussion of this after the skit. So why worry about Adhikar? So this is the point I'm making. Krishna says that guna dosa dashir dosho gunas tubya varjita. One should not see material good and evil within a devotee of the Lord. Indeed, one becomes pious by giving up such mundane conceptions. So Krishna is saying one should not look at these things, that what is working and what is not working. However, at the same time in Srimad Bhagavatam, Maharaj Nimi, he asked the Navyogendras, what are the natural symptoms by which I can distinguish between the most advanced devotees, those in the middle level, and those who are neophytes? So they seem to be apparently contradictory, but they are reconciled by the motivation behind the action. Now we'll have a skit. Do we have any questions, quick questions in the meantime?
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you for your class.
I think the mic is not working.
I have as far as I have understood till today, until I saw your presentation, I always felt that Madhyama is a pure devotee of the Lord, based on whatever I heard. But looks like you are giving a very liberal understanding of Madhyama Adhikari, that he is like.
So I'm giving a more stringent understanding of Madhyam Adhikari. He's on his way to becoming a Uttam Adhikari.
So, I'm saying liberal.
So define liberal. What does liberal mean?
Like practicing devotees, you're putting them under the category of Madhyama Adhikari. But yes, so far my understanding has been that Madhyama Adhikaris are actually pure devotees of the Lord.
Right. So that's the point I'm making. Madhyama Adhikaris are mixed, are practicing devotees. So they are not pure devotees. So we initially said that there are three. There are materialistic devotees, they are practicing devotees, and they are perfected devotees. So the Madhyama Adhikaris are practicing devotees. That's the category in which most of us fall in. You don't look convinced.
There is like a, I don't know, but from based on what mostly nectar of instruction, I would think that Madhyama Adhikari is actually a pure devotee of the Lord, but he's not like Uttamadhikari, but still he's a pure devotee of the Lord. Like, the conception is very strong, so throughout okay. that I was thinking about
okay.
it.
Okay, maybe we can talk about it more later on. Okay, so I'll just, maybe we'll take the question later on because they're ready. And we they'll need three mics.
Hare Krishna, we would like to start the play with the following legal disclaimer. All characters and events in this play are completely fictitious. This play is not based on any person that we know or any event that has actually transpired. Any resemblance is entirely coincidental and completely unintended. Sometimes a bitter pill of truth is easily taken when coated with a sugar of humor. That is the only purpose of the play, to illustrate a certain siddhanta through the technique of enacted humor. Okay. Also, the play has been scripted by Baya Haridas. If any one of you has issues, I'll be more than happy to provide you with his home address, email address, and Twitter and Facebook accounts. It is said that Godhead is light and essence is darkness. This metaphor contrasts the illuminating self-awareness that comes from pursuing the path of spirituality with the darkness of ignorance of one who is only absorbed in material pursuits. However, between these two stark dualities, there is a zone where aspiring devotees reside. Here, one is still not completely out of the material conception and not completely in the spiritual conception. This is a fuzzy zone of partial darkness of material conditioning despite awareness. We call it the twilight zone. In the twilight zone, the material and spiritual conceptions coexist. These forces often meet and they collide with, shall we say, very interesting results. The characters of our play are residents of this twilight zone.
Are you still playing? You should be studying by now.
I would be careful if I were you, Dad.
Me? Careful? For what?
We wouldn't want to harm your tender creeper of devotion.
Really? How is that, son?
I was definitely an exalted yogi or advanced devotee in my previous life to have taken birth in a devotee's house. Now, you wouldn't want to offend me, a devotee, and harm your spiritual life, would you? Be careful of the mad elephant's fence, Vaishnav Uprod.
Uh, well, it is my duty to correct you, but I guess a few more minutes would be okay.
Thank you, Pitta. You're such a nice devotee.
Just leave it away.
Thank you, Krishna, for protecting me.
Thanks to Krishna. Protecting from what, my dear?
Well, I had an accident. I was driving and the car went over the curb.
What? Accident? How is my car? Is it okay?
I'm doing quite all right, Prabhuji. Thank you for asking.
Well, that you're okay. Thanks to Krishna. All glories to Guru and Gauranga. Hari Bol.
Okay. That should be enough, Prabhuji.
So, what happened?
So, I was driving and chanting.
You know that's not a good idea. You always tend to doze off while chanting.
Well, excuse me. I was just trying to immerse myself in Lord's name. Kirtaniya Sadahari.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
Never mind. Actually, you should be thankful to me.
Thankful? For what? For banging up my new car?
Well, all devotees are under the control of Krishna. He gives us a token of reaction for something that could have been much more severe. So, by having this minor accident, I have actually taken some severe karmic reactions from your past sinful life.
Well, I guess this is the third time in a year that you have washed away my karmic reactions. I should be in a pretty good shape by now.
I guess so.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna.
Hari Bol.
Please pardon our appearance. We were not expecting anyone. But please do come in.
Well, we were in the neighborhood and decided to stop by and give you the benefit of our association. After all, it's our responsibility to help less advanced devotees make progress.
My Prabhuji, he's so giving. Looks like your day has just started.
Well, we had a late night yesterday and we could have overslept a little bit today.
Oversleep? Jiva Jago! Don't waste your time sleeping in the love of Maya. That is the best time for devotional services.
My Prabhuji, he hardly sleeps. He wakes up at 4 every morning.
But the other day when we went to your house, he was sleeping in the afternoon.
Child, I was just giving my body some rest so I could continue with my devotional services. By the way, are you chanting?
I am trying, but I am not really regular.
Well, you should be serious. After all, a child that does not deliver his parents is like urine.
Urine? I am urine?
No, son. It's just a figure of speech.
Yes, son, don't worry. We all are trying, but there are so many struggles.
Don't try. Just do it. It's your mind that keeps playing tricks. Beat it constantly.
Beat my mind?
If you can't, my Prabhuji will beat it for you.
No, I can take care of that.
So, what are your plans for today?
Transcendentally busy. We will be giving our association to other devotees. And in the evening, I'm giving a lecture. You should come.
Oh my, Prabhuji, he gives such powerful lectures.
Well, if you don't preach, you are no better than a dead body. Preach to yourself and preach to others.
There's so much for us to learn from the two of them.
Yes. Everything seems so fascinating, but sometimes we are confused. I guess we have a long way to go.
Confusion? There is no confusion. Just come to my lecture. You'll learn a lot.
My Prabhuji is so knowledgeable. He knows so many shlokas.
By the way, I had lent you a book. I would like to have it back. Could I have it back, please?
That was just last week. We haven't finished reading it. But sure, you can have it back.
My Prabhuji is transcendentally attached, you know.
That's nice. Oh, that actually reminds me. You had borrowed one of our books a few months ago. Have you finished reading it? Prabhu, can we have it back, please?
Really? I don't remember. I don't even know what I did with it.
My Prabhuji is so transcendental that he keeps losing stuff. He probably lost your book, you know?
Oh, okay. That's fine. We will order another copy.
Can we offer you some prasadam?
But my Prabhuji, he hardly eats, you know?
But we never say no to prasadam.
Do you want my Prabhuji's remnants?
What? Thank you so much, though. Maybe some other time.
We got to go. Busy day ahead.
We really have to train them up.
Well, remember, determination and association. Otherwise, you're no better than a Dvija Pada Pashu.
A who?
A two-legged animal. Hari Bol.
Dad, did he just call you an animal?
I guess he did, son.
But my Prabhuji is a two-legged one.
Hari Bol, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Always a pleasure to see grihastha devotees executing Krishna consciousness in such a wonderful way. All glories to your family. Jaya, Hari Bol.
Haribol. It's so nice to see you, Prabhu. What can I do for you?
You? No. It is I who should be serving devotees like you. Prabhu, please consider me your humble servant and engage me in some service to your lotus feet, Prabhu.
Oh,
please,
no.
Prabhu.
Oh, no. Please don't, Prabhu. So, are you headed out somewhere?
We're going downtown for some sankirtan. Come along. It'll be good for your spiritual life.
I guess it would be. But I had promised to spend some time with my son today.
Oh, that's no problem. He can come also. Yeah. Bring him along.
No, Prabhu. He had promised to play tennis with him. Actually, our son is getting really good at it. So we wanted to encourage him to play tennis. Also, he's looking forward to it for a while now.
Prabhu, when are you going to get over this skin disease?
Dad, you have a skin disease?
No, son. It's just a metaphor.
You do remember that family and all relatives are simply material relationships. Your spiritual life is much more important. You need to prioritize and focus, Prabhu.
But Prabhu, don't they say for a devotee, raising their family is also devotional service?
Not by playing tennis with them. Avoid Maya at all costs, Prabhu.
But I really like Maya, auntie.
Son, this is a different Maya auntie that we are talking about. Shh, quiet.
But Prabhu, tennis is a good exercise. And in this way, he will get to make some new friends.
New friends? For what? To become like them? Associating with karmis is like playing with serpents. It's very dangerous.
What is a karmi?
Karmi? Anyone who is not a devotee.
Dad, is Grandpa a serpent?
No, son. We will talk about this later.
Prabhu, it is very difficult for us to understand what you're saying.
Well, just chant attentively and hopefully Krishna will give you all the intelligence. I have to go now. I thought I would stop by and give you a chance to make advancement in your spiritual life, but as they say, you can only take the horse to the water. Hari Bol.
Dad, did he just call you a horse?
No, son. It is just an analogy. But truthfully, I do feel more like an ass right now.
But my Prabhuji is a two-legged ass. Now that is unique, no?
I guess unique is the happiness that we have been deriving from Krishna consciousness. However, moments like these do make me wonder if we are on the right path.
Yeah. Well, let us pray to Krishna that we are able to happily stay on this wonderful path of Krishna consciousness.
Hare,
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Wasn't that wonderful? So I just want to introduce the participants. Parikshit Prabhu, the Brahmachari. Shrinjoy, narrator. Couple 2, pure devotee couple, is Piali and Soumya. The hassle couple is Akshay and Priyanka. And their son is Shubham. Hare Krishna. So as we had said in the disclaimer, the events are, and the really purpose of the skit is for us to a little bit understand more about what happens when Adhikar is misunderstood. So when this is working, yeah. When Adhikar is misunderstood and misinterpreted. So this is Adhikar Apeksha. You know, acting without understanding of Adhikar. So question. So there are 3 ways in which there is Adhikar Apeksha being done over the sketch. Can anybody talk about, let's say, the first one? Pure devotee syndrome.
Anything else?
So what we see in the first act of the script is like the child saying that, quoting from the 6th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that I'm born in a house, devotee household, because I was a great yogi in my previous life. So you better treat me nicely. So the part about being about a great yogi being born in a devotee house, Krishna says that is questionable. Or the wife coming and saying that, you know, I hit the car and I burned off your karma. Now, the fact that Krishna gives a token reaction is fine, but the way that it's being interpreted. Second is pride. So in the second skit, what we see is basically a lot of pride in the second couple that comes in. And the third is too much focus on the externals. These are 3 ways in which we see that Adhikar is being violated. We'll have a little bit more discussion on this. So motivated interpretation of the scriptures is when one tries to establish Adhikar by a motivated interpretation of the scripture. So this is when, so scripture is I'm using it in a more generic way. So this is what Krishna says, this is what Prabhupada says, this is what Guru Maharaj says. You know, they're all scriptural. But when we start using them in a motivated way, that applies to us to elevate our Adhikar. You know, that is when we are doing Adhikar Apeksha. Some examples from the scriptures. one of the most stark example is that of Romaharshan. So as you know, in Amisharan, when initially the 88,000 sages sat down, who was the speaker to begin with? It was Romaharshan. And at that time, Lord Balaram, he entered into the assembly. So everybody stood up to give obeisances to Lord Balaram, with the exception of Romaharshan. And what did Lord Balaram do? He took a kusha grass and he cut off his head or he stabbed him in the heart, but he killed him there. So there were three things that Lord Balaram did that Krishna does not typically do. One is, he killed a Brahman. Krishna says, Go Brahmanaya Hitayacha. He is a protector of cows and Brahmins. He killed. So Romaharshan was a disciple of Vyasadeva, Brahman. The second is, Krishna says that I will always uphold the words of my devotees. So just before Romaharshan was given the seat, he got the benediction of all the sages there. What was the benediction? May you have a very long life. And how long was his life? Just a few seconds. You know. So the first thing that Balaram killed him was the Brahmin said that you have made a word come untrue. You know, this is just not done. And the third thing that happened was, Lord Balaram himself took a very tenuous position, because when one would judge Lord Balaram as being proud, that you have entered into this stage and just because somebody did not give you obeisances, you killed the poor guy. You know, not fair. But why did he do that? Despite these three things, he killed a Brahmin, he violated the words of his devotees, and he himself took on a position that was open to criticism. Why did he do that? He did that because he could understand that Romaharshan did not understand the true implication of Adhikar. So the reason that Romaharshan did not get up and give obeisance to Lord Balaram is because in the scriptures it is stated that when a person is sitting on the Vyasthan, he is the representative of the Lord. So at that point, he does not have to give any obeisances. But that is what is called as a conditional Yamagra. So, but when the Lord himself is walking in, then you better give him obeisances. Right? So otherwise you don't have an understanding of what the scriptures are saying. You're just following the rules and regulations, but not really understanding what they mean. All the rules and regulations in the scriptures are meant to get you to the level where you actually begin to develop a loving attraction to the Lord. So when you're not doing that, so Lord Balaram could understand that this is a person who is going to be sitting in the assembly in which Srimad Bhagavatam will manifest. And he is not the right person to moderate the appearance of Srimad Bhagavatam. So out of his infinite mercy to the coming generations, Lord Balaram took this position. So, and why? Because Romaharshan interpreted the scriptures in a way that was favorable to himself. So that is a motivated interpretation. Ramachandra Puri, you know, this is the classical example that when his guru was sick, when Madhavendra Puri was sick and he was in a lot of pain, then Ramachandra Puri goes to him and starts preaching, you're not the body, you know, don't worry about the body. And Madhavendra Puri, you know, he basically says, you don't come in my presence again. So what Ramachandra Puri was saying was right, but where he was saying it was wrong. And that's where one should understand. He was the disciple. It was not his position to instruct his guru. So it is said that the moment a disciple starts thinking that he knows as much or more than his guru, his spiritual life has stopped at that time. So a disciple must always have this understanding that I am dependent on my guru in all senses of the word. The sages is a common example that they misinterpret the scriptures and act in a certain way that shows them as uttamadhikaris. How does it manifest in practicing devotees? That is us. You know, when we start doing a lot of of I, me, mine things in interaction. That my analysis of this is, it should be like this. Or what I understand Srila Prabhupada saying is, like this. Or my Guru Maharaj says, it is this, so it should be like this. Protect one. So before we start assuming anything that is relevant to our eligibility to execute devotional service, we should try and understand what our Guru and Srila Prabhupada is saying. We should carefully read Prabhupada's books, preferably under the guidance of a devotee. We should establish a protected circle of books, devotees and activities to grow in. This is because at this stage we are more likely to commit offenses than to go on the right path. So just like if there is no wheels, if there is no hands on the wheels of a car, it is unlikely that it will go straight on the road. It is probably going to veer off. So we need that protection of Srila Prabhupada, our Guru Maharaj, devotees. You know, we do activities that are prescribed for us. You know, we I'll give you an example that earlier on when I got Brahman initiated, so I had some attraction for deity worship, but I took it to another extreme. So I used to do in the morning, I used to do more than 60 to 90 minutes of deity worship, and early in the morning I used to do it. I used to kind of enjoy it, and then eventually my wife complained to my Guru Maharaj about it. So you know, then my Guru Maharaj called me up and said that, you know, no more than 15 minutes. So and the reason, of course, he did was because he knew that I could not sustain that. That I was just being, you know, I was just being immature in my enthusiasm about doing it. And finally what he said is what sustained me. That, you know, I got it down to 15 minutes, and now we are like at about, I think, 25, 30 minutes. But, you know, but we are able to sustain that. One of the questions that we should ask ourselves is, what is my real motivation over here? Because the apeksha that we are doing is that we are doing a motivated interpretation of the scriptures. So the way that we counteract is by asking, what is my real motivation over here? Am I trying to win an argument with him? I'm trying to prove a point. I'm trying to show that I'm better than him. If that's my motivation, I have to be careful. But if my motivation is that I'm trying to help him, I'm trying to clarify a point, I'm trying to support a conception that he has, that is the correct motivation. So this is a question that we should constantly keep asking ourselves to protect ourselves from this. So this is an illustrative example, just to be taken in a very limited context. So I wanted to read this out. It basically supports non-vegetarianism. Meat eating or flesh eating can be allowed. The general rule holds that one living being is food for another. The weaker subsistence of the strong. Exploitation of the weaker living being by the stronger is the natural law of existence. The law states that a human being must subsist on another living being. There is no possibility of checking this tendency by any artificial means. This is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 9:26. Those who are accustomed to eating animals can offer foodstuff. The government may sanction the eating of meat. Cows may be utilized to feed the hungry masses of people. They can indulge in flesh eating. Who has said this? Right. So these, not one of the purport, but these are statements made by Srila Prabhupada that have been taken out of context and juxtaposed there. So I'm not going to go over this, but these are the purports of Prabhupada, and these are the statements that have been over. So this is a classical example how you can take things. So Ravindra Swarup Prabhu was once saying that, so earlier on when he was trying to work his way in college, he didn't have a lot of money, so he wanted to start a service. it's mostly humorous. He wanted to start a service wherein he said that you tell me whatever point you want and I will say that and I will show you how Srila Prabhupada supports it. He said, you know, because he was pretty well read he had read Prabhupada's books many times over. He said, whatever point you want, you know, vegetarianism, non-vegetarianism, illicit sex, multiple marriages, whatever point you have, you give it to me, I will take a purport, I will take statements of Srila Prabhupada and support it. This is the danger of quoting out of context. Very important for us is when somebody tells us, but Prabhupada said this, you say, Prabhu, can you explain to me the context in which Prabhupada said this? So the second part of it was, of the skit was, talking about pride, where one's evaluation of one's adhikar is clouded with material pride. Examples is like Prajapati Daksh. When he was doing the yajna and he entered the hall, everybody with the exception of Lord Brahma and Lord Shiv stood to give him obeisances. He got very upset at Lord Shiv because he thought, you know, he's my son-in-law. I'm his father. Father-in-law like his father. So he was looking more from the perspective of the material relationship that I'm superior to him. He had that pride. I'm a Prajapati. The Prajapatis are next to Brahma in the hierarchy. But Lord Shiva is of course transcendental. So because of that, you know, he picked a fight with Lord Shiva and lost his head. Literally lost his head. Then there's an example of Sringi. That, you know, Sringi, he cursed Parikshit Maharaj. And what does he say when he cursed? He says, they don't know the power of the Brahmanas. So he had pride about being a Brahman. Then in one of the I think either it's in one of the Puranas or in Ramayana, there's a pastime that once in Ayodhya there was no rain. And so the citizens went to complain to Lord Ram, there's some fault in you. Because the lack of rain indicates an impiety in the way the king is running the kingdom. So then Lord Ram got on his horse and he started traveling around the area. And he saw that in the jungle there was a Shudra performing austerities. So he took off his sword and he cut the head of the Shudra and rain started falling. So now obviously Lord Ram is not taking the position that the Shudra cannot perform austerities. Because Lord Ram's own guru Valmiki, he was even below a Shudra. And he was a Dayasu, he was a bandit. And he was Lord Ram's guru. But being omniscient, he knew. So there's a little bit of backstory that this particular Shudra, he had this strong desire to control. So he understood that by Brahma Tejas, he can control other people. So he went to different sages asking them that you teach me how to perform meditation. But because they could understand the contamination in his heart, they refused to accept him as a disciple. So then he said, okay, I will do it on my own. So then he started sitting and doing it on his own, which was apeksha. And then, so Lord Ram corrected it. Maharaj Indradumna, there is that pastime of Maharaj Indradumna performing meditation and Agastya Rishi coming. And he did not acknowledge Agastya Rishi. So Agastya Rishi curses him to become an elephant. And he becomes Gajendra. So the acharyas say the reason Agastya Rishi cursed him was because he understood that Indradumna Maharaj had so much pride in just the fact that he was following this process of meditation that he did not even understand the etiquette of how to deal with other devotees. So that's why he cursed him to become an elephant. Within the ISKCON context we have, and I'm sure all of you are aware, there was this devotee in Mayapur who came and he started chanting sounds like Haridas Thakur. He would chant 192 rounds. And then people went to Prabhupada and said, you know, we have a great devotee. Prabhupada said, just wait and see. And then in 2 weeks he went away. So he had some kind of pride because he knew that people respected people who had, you know, who chanted. So he was trying to take on that position, but he didn't have that adhikar, so he didn't sustain himself. Or like Jayaprataka Maharaj was sharing in the Mayapur, in the GBC lectures this time, that he once went to Prabhupada and he said that, Prabhupada, I am the most fallen. And then Prabhupada said, you're not the most anything. So, you know, just being that, having that sense that I'm the most fallen, that itself is a very exalted stage of realization. You know, for Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami to say that I'm the most fallen, it makes sense because he is a very exalted devotee. But for a new devotee to come and say, I am the most fallen, so you know, they don't even understand the definition of fall. You know, to say I am most fallen, and Prabhupada corrected that, you know, you're not the most anything. Or there's another pastime of Tamal Krishna Maharaj. He had once done something, and then he went to Prabhupada, and he said, Prabhupada, I have achieved this. And then Prabhupada's, you know, he went through this. He started on a tangent. He's saying that, you know, from the bodies of Mahavishnu comes multiple universes. And then in each universes, there is Brahma, and within Brahma there are millions of planets. Each planet there's millions of living entities. And then there is one small living entity called Tamal Krishna, who was saying that he was achieved a lot. So Tamal Krishna Maharaj was saying that after I heard this, I got a sense of where I actually belonged. In the sense. How does it manifest in practicing devotees? It manifests in the sense that I am better than you. That's the strongest manifestation of pride. It may be subtle, but it does manifest like I am better than you. The other way that it manifests is by, so in the second skit you saw, there were two kinds of interaction. One was the person who was directly saying, you know, attend my lecture and no problem. He was directly preaching. So that is the mood saying, I am better than you. His wife had the mood saying that, my Prabhuji is better than you. So that is also a very subtle form of pride. That, you know, somebody comes to you and says, I'm trying to chant 8 rounds. Really? I know somebody who chants 64 rounds. You know, so this is basically trying to put the person down in context with somebody else. Or like, I'll give you a personal example. Once we were talking to, you know, all, we have all, you know, we don't pick our families, we are kind of born with them. So, you know, so we have different kinds of people in the family. So there's one person who was not very favorable to ISKCON, but favorable to Krishna. And so we were having this discussion, you know, to him, and he says, oh, you know, you do this. And then he started saying, but I know of this person, and he gave a whole list. You know, he gets up at 1 o'clock in the morning, he cooks 8 times for his DT, and you know, he's always chanting this, that. And then halfway through that, I understood that, what is he was actually trying to do? He was trying to say that this is a real devotee, not you. So, that's an indirect way of trying to deprecate somebody. One way is saying, I'm better than you, the other way is saying that, he's better than you. So we have to be careful against both of them. Then we tend to become very competitive with respect to our services. So it is natural for us to have attraction for our service. That is why we are doing that service. Somebody may be doing DT worship, somebody may be doing book distribution. So it's very natural because we have a certain propensity. That's radhika. But then what is not natural is when we start saying that if you don't do this service, you actually, there's something wrong with you. You know, somebody is doing book distribution and they come to you and say, you're not doing book distribution? Oh, Prabhu. Prabhupada said his heart is in book distribution. Or somebody is doing, you know, Harinam and saying, you know, you're not doing Harinam? Oh, Prabhu. Harinam. How will you make progress? You know, so it is okay for one. And Prabhupada said that over and over again, that Krishna can accept services in more ways than you can offer. You know, Krishna is bhavagrahi. You know, he takes the essence. You know, he can take service in, you know, and Prabhupada said that there is no difference between a pujari on the altar and the sweeper in the bathroom. From Krishna's perspective, they're both executing devotional service. So, more for us, because again, this is very natural. When we do a service, we develop attraction for that service. But then, it is also natural for us to share our attraction, but not at the cost of trying to deprecate the other person. That if you're not doing the service, if you're not preaching, you're, like Prabhupada would say that if you're alive, you will preach. And then people will flip it around and say, if you don't preach, you're dead. Right? Or Prabhupada would say that ISKCON is a preaching movement. And people will flip it around and say, if you don't preach, you don't belong to ISKCON. So, very, very important for us to understand the mood of the speaker. Before, anytime we flip it around, we know that we are actually committing offenses at the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada. Because, you know, he, when he said all this, he also said that ISKCON is I'm building a house for the whole world to live in. He did not say only for the preachers to live in, or only for the book distributors to live in, or only for the pujaris to live in. He said for the whole world to live in. Then disrespecting. Bhakti Purushottam Maharaj, you know, he was giving this class, really funny class. He says, you know, people come to ISKCON, they start chanting 16 rounds, they start chanting 4 rounds, they think they're like, you know, they think they're the same level as Suryadev, Ayudev. They start chanting 8 rounds, they're like Indra. They start chanting 16 rounds, they're beyond Brahma at the time. So, you know, so it becomes very fashionable for us to start dating that, you know, oh, Brahma, you know, what, you know, you know, Krishna chastised him, you know, what Brahma, he didn't even understand, you know. Indra, he sent all that, nothing happened to Krishna, you know. So just because we know the philosophy doesn't make us, I mean, sure, Indra goofed up, we know that. You know, and he goofed up, you know, to some extent, to illustrate for our benefit. But just because we know it doesn't make us better than Indra. Right? We are goofing up much more often than Indra is. Then disrespecting other acharyas. It is natural for us to have affinity for our own acharyas, but not at the cost of disrespecting others. And disrespecting other devotees, of course, and non-devotees. You know, we should not develop this, that this person is a karmi and this person is, you know, a bhakta, so, you know, try to develop that. So a karmi is just a person who is innocent. And, you know, and a neophyte is a person who is embarking on the path to devotional service. How to protect oneself? Most important is develop a service attitude. You know, the cure for pride is service attitude. Constantly check with our peers and seniors, and the introspection is that whatever am I doing, is it helping me? Is it helping the other person? We are running out of time. So the third part of the skit was too much focus on the externals. And the examples from the scriptures are like Jai Vijay. They saw the four Kumaras, they saw they were child, so they kicked them out. And they got cursed because of that. Or in Chaitanya Leela, there is this Brahman who used to perform austerities by only drinking milk. And he wanted to participate in the Sankirtan movement, and Mahaprabhu said that you can't. Just by external following of anything, you don't get the adhikar. Or Maharaj Chitraketu, he saw Lord Shiva sitting with Parvati Devi on his lap, and he started laughing. He did not understand that Lord Shiva and Parvati Devi, they are fully detached. They don't have the conception of lust in them that he was trying to project. Or Gadadhar Pandit, when he saw Pundarik Vidyanidhi, he saw that he was very well dressed, he had scented hair, oils and all that, and he started thinking, is this really a devotee? But then he understood that he is actually the most exalted devotee. How does it manifest in us? We become judgmental. When we focus too much on the external, we become judgmental. That, you know, is he wearing good tulsi beads or not? You know, he's chanting over there in the afternoon, which means that he did not chant in the morning. So, you know, so he should be chanting in the morning. Or, you know, this is the third plate of prasadam this person is taking. So, you know, so sometimes, like I remember, just before I got my second initiation, so, you know, the thing with second initiation is you can do deity worship. So I read the Orange Book, you know, which basically said, what are the do's and don'ts. And after that, I would go to the temple, and the pujari would be offering incense, and I would be counting 1, 2, 3. So, you know, 4 to the feet, 2. Oh, he did not do 3 to the face. You know, he should have done 7 around the body. He actually did 9. So, you know, I would be going like this, you know, there. And then eventually I understood that, you know, I'm completely losing my, you know, the sweetness that I felt during the aarti, was completely losing that. So that's what happens when you focus too much on the externals. So Prabhupada would say that, become a bee. Try to focus. If you have to focus, try to focus on the good things. Just like a bee, even in the marsh, it will sit on the lotus and get nectar from there. Not to become a fly. All the fly does will focus on the negative. This is bad, this is bad, this is bad. All that the fly gets is maggots out of it. So the purpose of understanding adhikar is like it's for self-evaluation and for helping others. And this is examples where personalities in the Bhagavatam, they actually applied adhikar properly and made advancement. Like when Gajendra, he had the crocodile on his foot, he was praying to Krishna that remove that crocodile. Kunti Devi, on the other hand, she was at a more advanced stage. What was she saying? Give me more miseries. So Gajendra was not saying that give me more crocodiles. He was not at that stage. He understood the stage that he was, and he was praying at that stage. Now the Brajbasis, they are at the level where they don't even see the miseries. If you look at the 9 years of Krishna's friend at Vrindavan, you know, there was one thing after another, one thing after another. There was Trinavarta, there was Putna, but you never see the Brajbasis saying that, you know, we have so much trials and tribulations. All they would think is, Krishna is being exposed to so many trials and tribulations. So they did not even recognize the fact that they were suffering. But Kunti Devi was not at that platform. She was not saying, what misery? I don't even know if there is any misery. She recognizes the misery. That, you know, that arson, cake was being poisoned, attacked with a weapon. She recognizes all the miseries. But she at the level where she says that, I welcome these miseries because they give me association of Krishna. So just by acting as per the adhikar, these personalities made progress. In terms of helping other, so Narad Muni is an expert in terms of preaching according to the recipient's adhikar. So to Migrari, he used to kill the animals half, and he would leave them suffering. And what Narad Muni told him was, you kill them completely. He didn't say that you go and chant, you know, or he didn't say you go and meditate, you know. Even so, killing an animal itself is a sinful activity. But Narad Muni understood that this is the level that this person can go to. So he took him to the next level, that don't let them suffer, just kill them right away. Dhruva Maharaj, he wanted a kingdom larger than Brahma. And what did Narad Muni said? You chant this mantra, you'll get a kingdom larger than Brahma. Then to the sons, and to Vyasadeva, we discussed earlier on, he preached Shuddha Bhakti. So even in the preaching of Srila Prabhupada, we see that Prabhupada was very, very keenly aware of the adhikar of the recipient. So when he would speak to people who were really non-devotees or outside, what would he talk about? He would talk about vegetarianism. You know, when he would talk to, you know, Christian priests or monsignors or whatever, he would say that, you know, what is the commandment in Bible? Thou shalt not kill. Why are you killing? Don't kill. He would not talk about Krishna's Rasa Leela. He would not talk about, you know, the intimate paths. So once actually a person came to Prabhupada and said, this was a disciple, he said, Prabhupada, all that you talk to us is that, you know, we chant and we worship the deity. Why don't you tell us something more? Why do you keep telling us the same thing over and over again? And then Prabhupada said, because you don't get it. So it's not that Prabhupada did not know. Prabhupada, of course, knew everything. But if you look at Prabhupada's classes, they were very simple. You know, it would be, he would talk about material detachment, he would talk about spiritual attachment, and basically enacted through the media of chanting the holy name. Very, very simple classes, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, and just these simple messages. And he would give them over and over again. And the reason was, he was talking in terms of the level eligibility of the recipient. So one must try to determine one adhikar under the guidance of a sincere devotee. It's very difficult to determine one's own adhikar because it's like the eye seeing itself. Very difficult. You know, initially I was trying to do a little bit of a workshop in which I would have some questions, and then people would basically evaluate themselves. And then while I was going through it, I realized that either people will just evaluate themselves as Kanishta Adhikaris or Mahabhagwats. So, you know, the people would either say that, you know, it's very difficult to be very objective about yourself. So that's where it's very important to take shelter. That, you know, with your preceptor or with your guru, try to. So even within this broad realm of Madhyam Adhikar, Bhakti Vinod Thakur says that they are further divided into Kanishta Madhyam and Uttam, and each of them are further divided into Kanishta Madhyam Uttam. So the point he makes is that it's Madhyam Adhikar itself is not monolithic. We saw that it is fairly broad, and itself can cover all the way from Bhajanikriya to Nishtha, a very wide range. So someone that we have faith in, someone that we have repose, some kind of, we can repose our inner thoughts, we can help evaluate our adhikar and then follow the do's and don'ts according to that adhikar. When we are evaluating another person's adhikar, the motivation should be how best to serve them. And this is, so this is something that should be done in a contiguous way. So, you know, it should not be an annual function that, you know, on every Memorial Day weekend I figure out what my adhikar is. You know, we should be doing it every day, every moment, that what is my eligibility now based on whatever I have understood about myself and whatever I have done. So I'll end over here. I apologize for going over time. So I think I'll just, do I have some time for questions? I don't have time for questions. Okay. So we don't have time for questions, but I will be available if anybody wants to come. If somebody wants a copy of the presentation, please come and give me your email address, or take my email address and send an email to me. And or I can give you my email address right away. It's badawal@gmail.com. So if you send it to me, I'll send you a copy of the presentation. Thank you very much. Vanchakalpatarubeshchikripasindubevacha Atitanam pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah.